Hey everyone, this is the Voices in Japan podcast with your hosts Ben and Burke. On today's show, we talk about over-tourism in Japan and the issues that it has brought. So let me just give you some statistics. So where do the tourists come from? So 26.9% come from China. Then next, 24.2% come from South Korea, 15.3% from Taiwan, 7.1% from Hong Kong, 4.9% from the US, and then other countries make up 21.6%. And the top four most popular destinations in Japan are Tokyo, with 46.2% of tourists going there. Osaka has 38.7%, Chiba 36%, and Kyoto in fourth place with 25.9%. And Hokkaido only has 7.7% of tourists going there. So we also talk about the coronavirus from China, which has been very big news recently. Complaints about tourists, what Japan is doing to help local communities adapt to over-tourism, do's and don'ts when traveling around Japan, and much, much more. All right, enjoy the show.
1, 2, 3.
What are we talking about today, Bert? We're talking about over-tourism in Japan.
But also this big thing that's going on now is that the coronavirus scare, I guess you could call it.
Do you know the source? The source is a town or city in China called Wuhan, right? Wuhan.
Yeah, central China, the Hubei province. I don't know what it is, but yeah. Actually, I was in a taxi in Japan the other day. And MK Taxi, do you know the taxi company?
Yeah.
Black taxis. I like them. Yeah, I actually used to teach English there, a business English
taxi.
Class. Yeah, for like a year. Somebody introduced. It was a good job. It was like $100 for an hour.
Man, the drivers speak great English. Like I remember, I took a taxi ride one time to work. It's all down
thanks to me.
and then the taxi driver just started having a conversation with us in English, and like I've never experienced that in Japan before. Like taxi drivers, you know, they obviously some have conversations with you, but it's always in Japanese. But I was with my coworkers, and we were speaking in English, and then just all of a sudden, the taxi driver just started, you know, just shooting a breeze with us in like almost perfect English. And it was, and he was like really nice, really friendly, and we were just so surprised at how good his English was.
Was this pretty recently or what?
This was probably about two years ago, maybe two. Okay. About 2 years ago. So we used to get MK taxis to work because they're a little bit cheaper than your standard taxis too, and they open and close the door for you as well, and they put
their hand on the door and stuff so you don't hit your head when you're getting in. Yeah,
they wear a hat and they take the hat off and, you know, when you're getting into the car and stuff. And, they're very, very good. I highly recommend them. I guess we should say we're not actually sponsored by them, but.
That's true. But we use them a lot too. But when I was teaching there, it was like 5 years ago. And at that time, they were saying that they're trying to get better prepared to handle English speaking customers because of this tourism boom that was happening. And they do these things where they take people on like 1 day or 2 day trips, and they'll like up to Asahikawa or some other city or down to Hakodate and stuff. And they'll stay with the customers for like a couple days. And so when I was in the taxi the other day, this guy was saying that he was supposed to actually have some customers come from China and he was going to take them on a tour, a 2 day tour, but that they had to cancel because they weren't allowed to leave the country, China, actually, because of this virus that was started. So, and he was saying he was kind of relieved that he didn't have to, you know, take them around, not because they were Chinese tourists or anything, but just because he was concerned about the virus spreading.
Yeah. I got told yesterday by one of my friends that the source of the virus is from people eating bats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Bats.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
So the people in that area in Wuhan or that part of China, yeah, they eat bats, and that's where the virus originated from.
Jeez. Well, this article was saying that, yeah, it was in a seafood market, and the place was illegally selling wildlife. So that wildlife must have been bats that they were selling or eating.
Would you eat a bat?
No, but I've had squirrel before.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's pretty much a bat, right? I had flying squirrels that look like bats in some countries.
It was actually killed by my girlfriend in high school.
And then you ate it.
Yeah, like her and her dad went squirrel hunting, and this was like a regular thing for them, and they would eat the squirrel, and I was like, all right, I guess so, man. But it tastes like chicken, man.
Always tastes like chicken, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing about this virus is they're saying, like, you know, at first they were saying it's probably not even as dangerous as the flu. And, I mean, obviously there's a scare going on because of what happened with the SARS virus back in 2000.
That's what it's been compared to, right? The SARS outbreak.
I mean, there's crazy things happening. They're building like a 1,000-bed hospital in 6 days in that city, Wuhan. And they've been saying, though, a lot of the people that have been dying are like elderly people who had pre-existing conditions. But, I mean, obviously when something like this happens, they only focus on the critical cases. So it seems like it can be very serious, but they're saying that it actually might not be that serious, you know, unless you consider the flu serious, because that kills like tens of thousands of people every year just in the U.S. alone or something. But anyways, it's a big topic here because there's a huge, going to be huge influx of people happening. Number one, because of the Chinese New Year, but also Snow Festival is about to start.
And there's a lot of Chinese people that come to Hokkaido. So there's been a big increase of Chinese tourists in the last 3 years or so. Like 2015, the Japan kind of lowered their restrictions on Chinese tourists. So since then, I've got this article here that Chinese tourists to Japan rose from 1.7 million in 2014 to 4.2 million in 2015. So in one year, it increased that much because of the visa regulations that ease up on those. Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you see it everywhere, like, you know, in Sapporo. Yeah, about 5 years ago, seasonal time, so in the winter, snow festival time, maybe in the summer, you'd see a lot of tourists, but now you see it all year round. You know, like you're walking down the high street or the main town center area, and there's especially Chinese tourists, you notice, and they kind of stand out just because they're generally a lot louder than other tourists.
A little bit.
I don't want to be bad mouthing. I mean, I'm Chinese anyway, and I know what the culture's like. My family's exactly the same. Like when we get together or they get together during, you know, family gatherings, and it just sounds like everyone is arguing the whole time, but they're not. They're just talking, you know. And actually, one of my... I have a friend, and he just had some new neighbors moved in, and they were they're Chinese. So these Chinese neighbors moved in downstairs of his apartment, and he said that every night that he can hear them talking. He said it sounds like they're arguing all the time, like they're fighting. He's like, "Oh man, maybe I should go down and, you know, make sure they're not doing anything or call the police or something like that." And I'm just like, "Man, just chill. They're just talking. It's okay. They're not arguing." Yeah, like they can't be like arguing, you know, 24/7. But he's really annoyed that they're down there because he said like late at night he can't sleep as well because they're you know, talking late into the nights. Some nights he said they're all right, but you know, generally weekends especially they get pretty loud, and once they get some friends round, it just sounds like there's a massive party going on downstairs, even though there's like no music or anything. It's just like the noise that he hears from their voices. So he can't sleep, and he wants to go down there and say something, but you know, in Japan, people don't really kind of do that, right? They don't really confront their neighbors if they're being noisy or anything. I mean, have you ever had any neighbors that were annoying, and then what did you do about it?
Yeah, I think I talked about it once where I, when I was in university down in Miyakin, I had some downstairs neighbors that were noisy, but they weren't actually Japanese. They were Mongolian, I think. And yeah, I ended up going down there and saying something to them. So it wasn't really interaction with the Japanese noisy people. But oh, actually, the very first apartment I lived in Japan, the same one that you lived in when you were teaching at that school as well, the next door neighbors was a young girl, and she would have like late people over late. And I mean, they were allowed to, like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning. So finally, one time I went over there and like banged on the door, and they came over, and I can't remember if it was so long ago. I can't remember if I said something in Japanese or in English, but then they were like quiet for like that night. But then like it eventually like started to slowly build up again, you know. So, but mm-hmm. I was moving out around that time. But yeah, they don't really confront people when they do that. But I mean, for the tourists. Like even when they're walking around like Sapporo Station or something, and like the big group, just like they're talking to each other, they definitely, like you say, stand out, because you don't usually see like Japanese people kind of like yelling to each other as they're walking and talking and stuff, or just like standing around waiting to get into a restaurant or something. Yeah, they definitely talk much louder. But that, the other thing, the reason they stand out is because they used to come over in very large tour groups. And stuff, so
yeah, I think they still do. Like, you always see like some guy waving a flag around, and then like 30 Chinese people just following him, right?
Yeah. So, there are still the big groups, but I think I read somewhere that they, because the way the visas changed, that they used to have to come over in large groups, but they made it so that smaller sized groups were able to come into the country and stuff. So, I think now there are. Still the big groups, but yeah, there's smaller groups as well.
And I guess because they're kind of like the new rich, the Chinese, so they're going everywhere. Like, you see them everywhere, but I think they particularly stand out, and they seem to be annoying quite a lot of people as well. Like, some of the things they do, you know, like the speaking loud, like I don't mind, but it depends where they are, where they're doing it, because they just do it everywhere, really. Like, if you're in like a shrine where normally people are very somber and silent, and they're just, you know, snapping away with their smartphones and uploading to social media. So that's another thing. Like, they just keep trying to just get videos using selfies and stuff like that, and it ruins the experience for other people. And I actually have a friend who he works in a shrine, and he regularly gets Chinese tourists coming. And there's a sign. I mean, it's not written in Chinese, it's written in Japanese and English, but a sign says you can only take a certain number of photos. And if you do want to take photos, you have to ask for permission at the reception. And I think there's like maybe a fee or something like that, but they never read that sign. They ignore it and they just start snapping away, and they climb over like boarded up areas. Like, if there's if there's like ropeway or something in a special garden, you know, that you're not allowed to go across, they'll just like climb over that. And I'm sure it's not just Chinese tourists, but he seems to think it generally is. There are tour groups run by Chinese companies in Sapporo, and they also get the Chinese tourists, and they take them to these shrines. So they've charged the tourists to, you know, take photos, but they don't pay the shrines. So they're going there and taking, basically they're trespassing, you know, and
oh, wow.
They're taking photos, and they're not giving any kind of compensation to the shrine. And yeah, and my friend said he worked there, and he approached one of the tour guides, and the tour guide just walked away. He just like ignored him and walked away.
Oh,
and
really?
Then, yeah, and there's almost like nothing he can do. I mean, he could sue them, but I mean, just think of like the cost that it would take to sue them. He actually asked me to write a sign in Chinese, you know, saying you cannot do this, you know, laying out all the rules in Chinese. But unfortunately, I can't read or write Chinese, so it wasn't any help. Yeah, yeah, I gave up when I was like 7 years old.
But you do speak some, right? But Yeah, well, I mean, just like you said, it's not just the Chinese tour. I mean, Japan obviously is doing a lot to build up its tourism industry, and there's all these negatives that are coming along with it. But, I mean, some of the stats I found in that Japan Times article that I sent to you of, I think in 2018, there was about like 30 million tourists. And I think 2019 was actually pretty similar. But they have a goal of getting 40 million tourists in the country by 2020. And they have a goal of getting 60 million tourists by 2030. So, I mean, they have these policies of trying to increase tourism. And spending by tourists in 2018 was $40 billion. And that was actually a forum's growth just from 2012 up to 2018. So again, another huge jump. So yeah, Japan has this huge goal of increasing the tourism numbers in Japan. And yeah, and we're starting to see a lot of the negatives of that as well.
Yeah, I guess the positives are, you know, there's a lot of money, creating more jobs, but it seems like it's not like that there's a lot of tourists is the problem. It's the way they kind of behave. So maybe tourists need to be a bit more mindful. So that, you know, there's a lot of things that tourists do that are not good to Japan and having negative impacts and making the locals not as welcoming to tourists, especially like in Kyoto. So Kyoto, there's a, you know, everyone who comes to Japan pretty much has to go to Kyoto because it's the most traditional experience you can have in Japan. But there's been a lot of complaints about what tourists are doing there. So, for example, Maiko, which are geishas in training, they've been harassed by tourists for selfies, and some have been leaving in tears.
Yeah, well, I've heard they've been chased sometimes by tourists. Like they're trying to say no or get away, and the tourists are still like chasing them and stuff. So.
Yeah. So it's just like everyone just wants to get that photo to post on social media. And then I guess I'm a little bit guilty of that sometimes too. You know, like I take a lot of photos of food to, you know, to post on like our Facebook page or something like that. But at least it's like food that I'm eating and I'm paying for, whereas there are some instances where tourists are going into restaurants and then they're just going in, taking photos and leaving without buying anything. That is another annoyance that restaurant owners have complained about.
Yeah,
in Kyoto as well, because they're going into these traditional Japanese style restaurants and just taking photos without buying anything.
Did you know that family travel has the incredible power to shape our children's worldview and create lasting memories? In a world where representation is often lacking, it's essential for our children to see themselves reflected in every aspect of life, including the stories we tell about travel. Introducing the Travel of Legacy podcast, where we're rewriting the script by celebrating the diverse voices of Black and Brown family travelers. Each episode of Travel of Legacy is a testament to the enriching power and the joy of exploration in Black and Brown communities. So journey with us and subscribe now.
Well, you know, you're bringing up the situation in Kyoto. This article that I found, again, Japan Times, it was a December article last year, but said the population of Kyoto is 1.5 million, but tourists, there's 50 million tourists coming in. So you can just see like the huge gap there between people who live there and the number of visitors. And 70% of those 50 million visitors are visiting Kyoto for the first time. Some other things that they're doing to try to find that balance or to deal with the complaints of the local residents is there's been a crackdown on illegal minpaku, which are like rooms that are rented out, such as Airbnb or apartments that are rented out. So they've been taking a lot of steps to crack down on illegal versions of those. I read that they are putting up signs, for example, to tell people to ask Michael politely before taking photos. I don't know how effective the signs are going to be, but they've also started to limit the number of hotel constructions going forward, new hotel constructions. And they're not requiring, but they're encouraging hotel developers to get the consent of the locals in advance for them to be able to build in their neighborhood. They're also like discounting subway tickets to try and encourage people to take the subway more. Have you ever been to Kyoto?
Yeah, I went back in when I first arrived, so probably back in 2009.
Okay.
And it was insane. Yeah, I went during Golden Week too, which is one of the busiest times of the year.
We just went there a couple of years ago, and the buses are just insane. Like the bus stops, basically, and that's what's something that the locals are complaining about, and that's why they're trying to encourage more people to use the subways, is because so many tourists are using the buses that what they used to be able to get on the bus, like to go to work very easy. Sometimes now they got to wait like two buses before they're able to actually get onto the bus just to go to work. Obviously, when you have more tourists coming in, it does bring in more money, but they're saying it actually in some cases, especially in Kyoto, the local business money is going down because there's this famous fish market. I think it's called Nishimaki or something. The locals used to go there for their normal like grocery needs. It's like one of the main markets in Kyoto. It's called Kyoto's Kitchen is a nickname. And the locals used to go there for their basic daily needs every day, but now so many tourists come in and they'll just get like some sashimi and eat it like the back of this this supermarket that they were talking about. So the owner of that supermarket was saying actually his revenue has gone down each year because the number of locals aren't going there as much as they used to. I mean, that's the thing, like even
the revenue is going down because not many locals are going there anymore because they're put off by the tourists.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, there is a lot of money that comes with tourism, but there's actually the side effect of local businesses being hurt by the tourists coming in. People say like they try to encourage things, like they limit the they should introduce measures where they limit the hours when overseas people are allowed to go into some of the local businesses, so the locals would still be able to go there and stuff.
I did notice, especially with onsens, like in Hokkaido. So, you know, I go to onsens quite often. And I noticed there's like, a big boom of Chinese tourists going to onsens as well. And it's kind of interesting that you don't really see many Caucasians in onsens as much as the Asians. But, you know, you see a lot of the tourists coming into these onsens and the atmosphere is completely different. I remember just going to like dinner where it's like a buffet, usually a buffet style, help yourself. And before, when they weren't really allowing that many tourists to come in, it was kind of quiet. You know, it was quiet. Everyone would line up, you know, very Japanese style, take your time. But now it's just carnage. It's just a free for all, and no one lines up. They're jumping in front of people. They're just getting crab. You know, just all getting crab, and because crab's great in Hokkaido, but the tourists love it, so they're just getting plates and plates of crab, and then they're just, the table is just full of crab shells, and you know they're losing, I guess, the sereneness of being in an onsen, and they're losing their character, but they're doing very well in business. And then I went to another onsen in Noboribetsu, and they kind of didn't allow tourists so much, but it was like really quiet. It was actually a better atmosphere, you know. It was
really
back to kind of Japanese style, but they had half the business of the hotel I was before, so they're not making as much money, but you know they're sacrificing the money, the profit, for a better atmosphere for their customers, I guess. But you know, they probably wouldn't last as long as the other hotels that allow in foreign tourists to come in.
The onsens are one thing. There's obviously, I mean, that's one change that I've noticed in Sapporo. There's like so many, obviously so many more new hotels going up just in Sapporo itself. Like I had some friends come and visit last year in October, and they said that they were staying in this hotel downtown, and I had never heard of it. And I looked it up, and yeah, it was a hotel that had just gone up in like 2018 or something. The Japan government, I read, is trying to encourage, I mean, as one of the steps that they're taking to help encourage tourism, they have a goal of building 50 world-class luxury hotels in Japan, according to this article in the Asahi Shimbun. The government's going to introduce a new loan program for private sector companies to develop hotels across Japan. And they're also taking steps like the government's going to help fund the increase in the size and speed of gondolas at 10 ski resorts around Japan. Did you know that there's a brand new luxury hotel at Chitose Airport?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's actually opening February 1st. It's called the Portum International Hokkaido, and it's on the upper level of the international terminal. Yeah, there's 171 rooms, and the room sizes go from 43 square meters up to 250 square meters. So it's a huge, huge, 250 square meters is like three times as big as my apartment, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they said there was 3 million international tourists from overseas coming to Hokkaido in 2018. And obviously that number is growing. I mean, Chitose Airport itself is turning into like a destination to go like spend the day because there's so many new shops there. We came through the international terminal on our way back from the U.S. because we flew through Korea. So we had to depart from the international terminal in Chitose. I mean, I was just noticing how big it had gotten, but I wasn't even aware that there was going to be this new luxury hotel opening there as also. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of luxury hotels going up in luxury condos and stuff in places like Niseko. I don't even think there's a luxury hotel in Sapporo. We've got a few nice ones.
Park Hotel. Station. Well, Park Hotel is like one of the oldest hotels, but I wouldn't exactly call it a luxury hotel.
No, even like Sapporo Grand Hotel, I think is supposed to be one of the nicest in Sapporo, but I don't think it's a luxury hotel. But yeah, we're gonna start seeing more of these. I guess that's a good thing.
They're building a new Vail in a Rizutsu ski resort as well. Yeah. That's timeshare. But even Rizutsu is packed now all the time. Like 7 days a week. There's people skiing, snowboarding, whereas probably about 5 years ago, it never used to be like that. It was just the weekends, but it is a great ski resort and probably one of the best ones in Hokkaido. But it's slowly kind of turning into Niseko in a way, like it's going to be overpopulated with tourism and these super huge hotels. But yeah, I mean, the snow is not so good this year and it wasn't that good last year. So I wonder what's going to happen in the future. If they're going to, I'm surprised that there's so much development going on when, the snow is kind of going down.
Well, I'll tell you something that worries me is a friend I have who lives in Asia comes over quite often, has been coming over quite often to go to Niseko for the past, 5 years or whatever. But this time he actually said he was going to visit one of the local mountains. I'm not going to say the name because I don't want to let people know too much, but I was just like, man, like he's even like, people in Asia are, I mean, you can kind of notice that there is even a growing number of overseas people at the local mountains around here in Sapporo. But I mean, just to hear like the local mountain name, like, or see it in his text, I was like, man, how does he know about that place?
No one should know about that, but the locals, they're going to get out eventually because the more tourists that keep coming over every year, they're also looking for the quieter places, the powder spots. And I went snowboarding last weekend and prices have gone up for even the local mountains a lot. They're finally, starting to realize how much money they can make. Like a can of beer, like a Sapporo Classic, has doubled in price.
Oh, wow.
So 420 yen. Was a small can of Sapporo Classic. And when I was at Rizutsu over the new year, it was the same, like a can of beer, 400 yen. And the tourists are going to pay that. People that ski there, they're going to pay that. But the local mountain, it was the first time I'd seen that price for a local mountain. Because local mountains they don't really put their prices up too much. But I think they realized that the tourists are kind of figuring out that the local mountains are the places to go. And it's getting busier, but it's still not on the scale as the bigger resorts. But in the future, it's probably gonna be like those as well, I think.
Like, I mean, I don't know how much right we have to complain because, I mean, technically we are on visas to live here, so in a sense we are visitors. But I mean, we have put in our time here. We've, been paying taxes.
Yeah, we're classed as locals now, right? We've been here long enough. We have permanent residences. Yeah.
Exactly. But that's what they're basically saying, again, going back to it, is like this balance of like the local businesses. Because even places like Niseko, I mean, there's a lot of business coming in there, but they're saying like, how much is the local community benefiting from it? Because obviously a lot of the development is by foreign companies. So all that money is actually leaving Japan. You know, a lot of the money is not staying in Japan. And how much is like the city Kuchan? Are they actually benefiting from all the development that's going on in Niseko? But to be honest, I think the land value even in Kuchan now is starting to increase and stuff. But this guy who has this website called the Inbound Ambassador, I think his name is JJ Walsh or something. He specifically tries to address these matters for, you know, how can local communities benefit more from tourism, and also how can they like combat some of the issues. So he says things like banning tour buses from traveling on local roads, which I think is a good idea, actually. Setting higher entry prices for overseas visitors. I mean, can you imagine that? Like if the ski mountains had a higher price if you don't have like a local address, something to show a local address.
Check your ID.
Yeah. Or to have special passes for local residents or for people who...
Well, that's like in Southeast Asian countries, right? Like if you go to like the Philippines or something, locals have a local price. And tourists have a tourist price, usually like double or something like that. Because I remember when I was in the Philippines, I managed to blag local prices because I look any Southeast Asian country. So I was like, yeah, I'm Filipino. And now like, okay, you could get a Filipino price. So
well, yeah, I think
every time I go around Southeast Asia, I try and blag a local price. But I don't think that, I guess I shouldn't do that really because,
well,
you know, I've got enough money to pay tourist prices, so I should
gaming the system a little bit. But I think it'd actually be a good idea if they did some things like this at the ski mountains, or even again at these like local markets and stuff, you know, to help local residents feel like they're not just getting hurt by the tourism boom and stuff. Another thing they said is like if they gave special passes to people who stay for longer than 3 days, because a lot of this, what they call day tripping or short trips, creates a very intensive schedule for tourists. And so they don't have as much time to kind of slow down and adjust to the pace of the city life. So again, if they offered special prices for people staying longer than 3 days, that would encourage them to kind of take their time more when they're in the city. Another thing would be to introduce a short stay tax, like people who are staying less or fewer than 3 nights, charge them more. But yeah, again, last thing he was talking about was like the Japan Rail Pass, you know, the Japan Rail
Pass.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a really good deal, that one.
Yeah, it's a really good deal for people overseas because they, you know, can ride, they just pay a fixed fee and they can ride any of the railway lines. But they say because of that, that again encourages day tripping. And not just, and day tripping isn't something that's done just by overseas visitors. Obviously, overseas visitors are the only one using the Japan Rail Pass, but even local visitors who do day tripping and stuff, this they're saying that this creates some of the annoyance for the local communities as well.
Yeah, I wanted to get into what I was saying earlier about being a mindful tourist when you come to Japan. Yeah. So, Burke, I have this list of do's and don'ts in Japan.
Okay.
So I want you to give us some do's and don'ts. What do you think might be on this list? Or if they're not, even if they're not on this list, what do you think tourists should not do or do when they come to Japan as a tourist? I've got a list of 30, so
okay,
I'm sure
so I should be able to get something.
Yeah.
Well, one that I think that I was actually read when we were preparing for this is like something about like eating. Tourists eat in places they probably shouldn't be eating. Like the example in my head is in Kyoto, there's certain neighborhoods where they don't want people to eat while they're walking around, and they've put up signs to discourage that, but those signs are discouraged. Is that on the list? Something
Dude,
about
that, eating? That was number one. Don't walk around eating or smoking, number one. I mean, I sometimes am guilty of walking around eating. If I'm in a hurry, I might eat an onigiri on the way to work or something, or on the way to the subway. I mean, I don't think it's that bad, is it? I mean, if it's like in a shrine or a sacred area or on public transport, maybe. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I do the same thing too. Not that often, but just when, I'm trying to rush and might buy some kind of bread at a bread store and scarf that down just walking somewhere.
Well, I've definitely seen you do it on a night out. You'll sneak a packet of crisps in your jacket pocket and start munching those on the way down the street. But you keep them hidden, so.
Guilty. I've got my hand raised because, yes, I'm guilty of that for sure. But, I mean, okay. So right. I'm one of those bad tourists.
All right, let's go for another one. So, well, we had this one, don't harass geishas or maikos for selfies. So that's another one on the list. But, what else you got, Burke?
I would say perhaps maybe littering. Is littering something or no?
Littering is not on this list. But I guess that's a basic don't for any country you go to as a tourist, I would assume.
How about, I'll say one personally that annoys me. I don't know if it's on that list or not, but something that annoys me are when tourists are walking around with their suitcases, not just like trying to get to their hotel, but like Sapporo Station, they'll have their suitcases when they're just waiting to get into a restaurant or something. And most of the restaurants are good about it. They'll have like an area where they have people collect their suitcases. But because of that, because they're not putting them in lockers, I don't know if it's because the lockers are all full and the city needs to do more to have lockers available for people walking around the station. But yeah, a lot of times people are just walking around like Sapporo Station with their suitcase, and that just looks very out of place. Is there anything about suitcases on there?
No, there isn't actually, but I agree with you. That one's really annoying. And it seems like suitcases are getting bigger and bigger. Like I remember just being at the subway station the other day, and there was a group of three tourists, and they had five giant suitcases like for three people. And they were massive. I've never seen suitcases that big before. And they were like right by the gates too. So yeah, it was annoying. Like they were just standing there, people just like walking around them. But that one is not on this list, no, unfortunately, but I think maybe it should be. So what, it should be don't carry your suitcase around with you around town if you don't need to carry it or something?
Yeah, like...
Store it somewhere?
Yeah, like find a locker or something. I mean, just like don't walk around shopping.
I think some of the lockers aren't big enough for those giant suitcases as well. Yeah,
that might be true. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes, obviously, people leave their suitcase with the front desk at the hotel they're staying at. Maybe on the last day, you know, when they're waiting to get on the train to go to their to the airport or whatever. But all right. How about being loud?
Yes. That's on this list for sure. Yeah. No talking on trains, especially, or being quiet kind of thing. Yeah.
How about something about driving?
Oh, what about driving?
Well, this is actually a problem, especially in Hokkaido, because you know, the road conditions change in the wintertime, get very bad, and there's a lot more people renting cars, but there's a lot more accidents happening because of overseas drivers. In fact, in my company, just the other day, we have a field store out in around Niseko, and somebody was driving down the road, and a person was pulling out of the of a side street, and for some reason just like pulled right in front of our company car, and obviously they didn't have time to stop because you know, it was like a snowy road and stuff, and but they had a dashboard camera kind of recording everything. So like they slammed into this car, and you could see like in the front of the car, it was like two Westerners that were driving, you know, and obviously had rented a car or something. So,
well, there is a driving one here, but it's do walk, drive, and ride on the left.
Standing on the right, the correct side of the like escalator and stuff. Yeah. That's something that is
in the left, like, yeah, stand on the left.
Left, because that's in the US. Yeah, it's on the right, even on escalators.
England is on, you stand on the right for an escalator, but it's kind of odd because England, we drive on the left, but when it comes to escalators, you stand on the right. Yeah, whereas Japan, stand on the left.
How about something just about like congregating in the wrong places, like on. Because this is something, again, that annoys me a little bit, like people just kind of like standing like in place on a sidewalk in a big group, Because Japan is obviously a very busy country, especially like in the morning and evening when people are trying to get to work or get home from work. And sometimes people don't, it's kind of like stopping and talking and they don't really understand, like, they're in the way and stuff. Is that on there or no?
So don't congregate in kind of like large groups on the street or something like that.
Yeah. Just like, don't stand around, don't block the walkway, nothing like that.
No, there isn't.
Out of the 30, man, I'm not getting anything, dude.
I'll give you some examples of what they have here. Okay. So they have, for example, don't harass the sacred deer at Nara. Nara, Miyajima Island. Another one is don't deface significant UNESCO World Heritage Sites.
That's the Arashiyama Bamboo Forest in Kyoto. That's a big problem down there, right?
Yeah. But don't overindulge in free Wi-Fi at places such as like Starbucks.
What?
So a lot of tourists kind of just go into, you know, coffee shops and use the free Wi-Fi, but don't buy anything. They're just hanging around. Yeah. And they don't really, you know, they're just there for the Wi-Fi basically.
I see.
So that's one of them. Do learn some basic Japanese. Probably an obvious one.
Actually, one good thing about this tourism boom is it's getting jobs to a lot of non-Japanese people, like in Sapporo and stuff. You see like store clerks and stuff, obviously to handle the Chinese customers. There's a lot more Chinese store clerks, convenience stores as well.
Yeah, all the ski resorts too. Yeah, a lot of the staff there are foreign staff as well.
Tourists will not even know basic Japanese and just walk up to a Japanese person and start like, you know, bombarding them with English. And then they're just like, you know, obviously Japanese people can get scared by that situation too. You know, it's funny because Japanese people are actually sometimes pretty happy when they're able to interact with overseas people, use a little bit of English. But yeah, I think learning something as simple as like sumimasen, which is like excuse me or something, or, you know, they should try to learn some basic simple stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, another one is don't leave a tip.
Oh, in Japan. Yeah,
so that's quite a big one because people always try to leave tips. Actually, I remember my mum came over. We were in Kyoto in 2008, 2009, and she tried to leave a tip at a restaurant, and the staff ran out and chased her around the corner. And was like, you left your 10 yen. Take it back. Yeah, and my mum kind of felt a little bit bad because, like, I guess like in I don't know what it's like in America, but sometimes in England we leave change as a tip, like loose change, which I guess is kind of rude, isn't it? And probably in America is pretty rude.
Well, if it doesn't much. Like add up to the percentage that they're probably expecting.
Yeah.
Actually,
don't blow your nose loudly in public.
Yeah, that's kind of like a cultural thing, right? Like people don't really blow their nose around other people. Or so I thought, but I know some people in my company, they're just like, they go at it, man.
My students too, like they don't hold back. I remember there was like some person giving a speech and then some student just starts like blowing their nose and stuff and they go at it. They don't, you know, they're not trying to be discreet about it too. So yeah, don't blow your nose in public. Don't jaywalk.
People are very, very obedient of like the crosswalk signs.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes like I feel like I'm committing like a very serious crime, even just on a side road. If I'm like, you know, it hasn't turned like green yet to say you can walk, and I'll like, there's no cars coming in the direction, but there's like three people standing behind me, and like I'll walk, and they'll kind of all just still stand there looking at me like walking, and I'm sure I'm just giving a bad name for foreigners every time I'm doing that. But
so you jaywalk in Japan.
Not often and not in dangerous spots, but yeah, I mean, I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and there's like, man, people, I mean, jaywalking is part of the culture.
Because I know like jaywalking is illegal in America, right? Isn't it illegal?
Yeah, I mean, you can get a citation for it, yeah.
But yeah, because it's not in England, like people jaywalk everywhere. So I never really heard the phrase jaywalk until I came to Japan when I met Americans.
Really?
Like, oh, who's Jay? He's walking all the time. That's what we were talking about. But anyway,
so don't do that in Japan. Yeah,
don't jaywalk in Japan. Yeah, well, we're coming up to that time. Any last words, Burke?
Well, I did just want to say that, I mean, there are some changes that we're seeing in Sapporo a lot, like, not just hotels coming up. There's a lot of these, like, cosmetic stores and stuff. That's another change because Chinese people apparently love, Japanese cosmetics and also like baby formula and stuff. But look, I mean, Japan is trying to encourage the tourism. I think it's going to happen. It's going to continue to grow, but they need to, They need to find that balance of keeping the local communities happy as well. Actually, one last thing that I would like to mention that annoys me, and it's not because of tourists, but it's something that has resulted from the tourism boom, is the 1,000 yen departure tax. You know about that?
No.
Yeah, anytime, it was introduced in January 2019, so anytime you're leaving Japan, you're actually paying extra 1,000 yen, and that's not just for... tourists, but that's for any non-Japanese who is leaving the country. It's not identified in any form. It's actually calculated into those like extra costs and taxes whenever you're buying a ticket. But there was a 1,000 yen departure tax that was introduced in January 2000. Yeah.
So Japanese people are not subject to that.
I don't think they are. Yeah.
But me or you would be.
Yeah. I think anyone who's not leaving the country with a Japanese passport, yeah. So,
Also tourists, yeah, just be a bit more mindful when you're traveling to Japan. Do some research before you come, and then the Japanese will be a lot more happier welcoming you to the country, especially like during the Olympics, because there's going to be a lot of people here this summer coming.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be somebody who's complaining about it because obviously, I mean, we travel overseas all the time as well too. We're tourists and still kind of, again, like a bit of visitors ourselves here in Japan, but because of the way I kind of feel about tourists coming here too, then I now when I do travel overseas, I try to kind of think a little bit more about what the culture is like there and try to match with it a lot better. So, but yeah, just like you say, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Olympics coming up. There's going to obviously be a huge influx unless this whole coronavirus thing like takes off and goes crazy.
Get rid of those tourists.
A little bit, yeah.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us again. And join us next week on another episode of Voices in Japan. Catch you next time.
Peace.